Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
To say the striped bass bite is on would be an understatement. Hey, you're inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of March 8th and 9th, and those that know where to go. Suffice to say, last Saturday, the AC Boat Show, I'm getting my phones going crazy with it. Leave me alone, I'm working. A couple of guys came in, it was about 5:30. I guess I got a discount coming into the boat show late and show me the photos, Mary, mother of God. Hey, check it out, man. There are some slot fish. You got your one keeper net at 28 to 31 inches. Things are going bonkers with that. But, hey, man, give me the white perch. That white perch bite is going strong. And, yes, there are bloodworms available out there. And, hey, back to the bass. Check it out, man. They were hitting plastics, grubs, paddle tails, and some hardware, man, like Azuri Mag darters. Whoa. But, again, thanks a lot of people that came up to the fisherman booth. I was back and forth, saying, hey, man, I recognize that voice. You're Tom P. Rack and Fin Ritter. Yes, special shout-out to Bob McDonald, a.k.a. He says he's the tile man. He is the tile fish master. And nice meeting you, Bob, and thanks for listening. Hey, up against heartbreak, coming up later on in the show is Jim Hutchinson, Jr., managing editor, Delaware Bay, New Jersey edition of the Fisherman Magazine. He's going to be talking about some pending fisheries news. Check out his editorial, the editor's log on page 3 of the March edition of Fisherman Magazine. Will open your eyes and maybe make your head explode. He'll be on later. But, hey, we're talking turkeys. Next couple of segments with Lou Gambale from the National Wild Turkey Federation. Grab that cup. Grab that Red Bull. I'll tell you, man, too. Don't forget the pickerel are going bonkers. A lot of stuff happens. It is that time of year. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5 and the WPG Talk Radio app.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious? 1 in 10 kids vape serious? Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously, the best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. South Jersey's talk station.
Hey, man, I know fishing is starting to get the burners going in there, especially stripers. Hey, man, they are... They're out there and they're biting. White perch biting. You have the bass, you have the pickerel, freshwater. It is indeed time to start thinking turkeys. Yeah, spring gobbler season, 5 or 6 weeks going on in April. In my travels this past week, it was great to see some birds out there. Man, I was in, downward 77 here. I'm not going to say where exactly where. And also another area in the southern tier. And, boy, the birds were not many. Saw a couple of flocks. They're starting to break up already, it seems. They were smaller. Saw one gobbler in full span. He was just, strutting his stuff. So there's it's going to be here before you know it. This may be a little early to scout, but at least you'll get a lay of that where the birds may be. Because some are always going to say they're going to break up, but some will always stay in there. And the gobbler counts, at least in the southern tier counties, look pretty good up north. Again, is another story. Waiting patiently to join us with his take on the preseason scouting for turkeys. Also, talk to National Wild Turkey Federation is fairly frequent guest in the spring, Lou Gambale. He was recently elected to the National Board of Directors for the National Wild Turkey Federation. Yay, Gumbad Lou. Mays Landing, South Jersey strong. At the recently completed National Wild Turkey Federation convention, down there in Nashville. And yes, Lou said there is one good Italian restaurant. And I said, Lou, I've been there a couple of times. I couldn't find one. Anyway, he's waiting patiently on the line for us. So, Lou, how you doing? Thanks for joining us on Rack and Fin Radio. Congratulations.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you. I appreciate that. Doing great, man. Listen, it's that time of the year. And it is the best time of the year.
Real fast, goodbye. Before we get going, I heard you rocked it in Nashville, my brother, at the National Wild Turkey Federation Convention. You were the man.
No. Listen, our organization. I'm so proud of our organization, all of its members, volunteers. Over 82,000 folks came through our convention this year. It's a record.
Whoa! See, man, Lou, yeah. that's up now. I want to ask you this: a concern now, because could some of that have been a result of the concern with the decline of the wild turkey populations in various parts of the country? What do you think?
Well, we're working hard throughout the country. There's no question. We've got some issues out there. And, you know, we've got our best minds. I'll tell you very quickly, we're proud that we were able to be a part of securing the first professorship in the United States dedicated solely on focusing and studying the wild turkey through the University of Georgia.
Wow.
Hopefully very soon we're going to have one here in the Northeast to report.
Lou, the numbers now, again, it's been, did it get more noticeable, the decline, or has it been just gradual, and all of a sudden everyone said, hey, man, what's going on with the birds? How has it been a couple of years going on, 3 years, 4 years? What's the deal?
Well, you know, for some, it's crept up on folks, and, you know, sometimes we're all in a bit of a denial until you really have to come to the sobering reality that, you know, hey, well, you know, we don't have as many birds as we did.
Right.
And, you know, you look right here in our home state of New Jersey. It's no secret. We've been suffering with some declines in North Jersey for quite a while. And and as much as we hate to admit it, we're now seeing it here in South Jersey. And we're going to work hard, and we're going to work with the – I can tell you I'm happy Fish and Wildlife understands and recognizes it. And collectively, we're all going to get our arms around this and work hard to – at a minimum, you know, stop the bleeding and try to come to a place where we can sustain a population for years to come.
Yeah,
that's
Lou,
the plan.
Louis, the NJ Fish and Wildlife Bureau of Wildlife Management, Jimmy Sloan, he's the upland bird biologist. He's going to be on in a week or two. They're just finalizing, getting some more data, rather, on that hen tracking program that's going on with several other states of which you're involved in. So hopefully we'll have some good news, Lou.
Yeah, and I'm optimistic that we will have some good news. I really am. And let's hope Mother Nature cooperates as we come into spring here. It's really critical that, you know, while we need precipitation, we need it at the right time. You know, these things are time sensitive. And when we get our pulse on the ground, you know, hopefully we get a window where we get that good weather where that increases your survival rate, you know,
literally
fourfold at a minimum.
Okay, listen, last year the spring gobbler count was 2,321. Hey, Lou, check this out, man. I'm like 36, whatever, different state hunters were drawn here to Jersey. That just goes to show you that it's still a hot turkey hunting area. Listen, the hottest zones were turkey hunting areas 20, 21, 14, 22, and 11. Zone 20 had 607 down to zone 11's 141. We're going to be hopefully hunting in turkey hunting area 12. Some good numbers there. Private lands, 1,657 nailed. Public lands, 664 nailed. So, Lou, that's still a decent number of gobblers.
It is. It's a decent number. You know, when you get inside those numbers, you see some declines in some of the zones that we haven't realized in the past. And that's, you know, it's a red flag. And what we hope is these are just anomalies in some of those zones, and those zones rebound. We believe we had a decent hatch last spring.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that'll be reflected in this season, and we'll see. You know, what we hope to see is a bunch of jakes, quite frankly, running around from last year's hatch, which would lead next year to a great crop of two-year-olds, providing all things, you know, work in our favor.
So somebody just passed me. Why? We call you the big bearded Lou. My lovely Dee Maria said, "Why do you call him?" I said, "If you saw the length of some of the beards of the turkeys, lose nail of all what Lou, you have all five species under your belt, correct? Or four species,
all
whatever
six.
It is, all six.
All six. Yeah.
That's including the one way down here in Mexico.
Yes, down in the jungle in the Yucatan."
You're a better man than me, Kambali, I'll tell you that. Lou is on the National Board of Directors, National Wild Turkey Federation. Lou, the machinations of the convention, you had biologists speaking, correct? What's the general tenor? Optimism, I assume, but they have been noticing and spotlighting critical hot points, have they not?
Yes, no question. And it varies state by state, and what you're seeing is, you know, if you look around the landscape across the country, a lot of states are making adjustments, whether it's through their overall bag limits, their season start times, length times, their fall seasons. There's a host of things that states are working on, and some of it's coming out of the research work. Some of it is being done in conjunction with the research work, and then we expect that as these research projects wrap up, we'll see some additional work. because we'll get more comprehensive data to work with.
Lou, we'll find out in a couple of weeks if Jimmy can spare it. But word is, rumors, whatever you want to call it, that this past October into the first Saturday of November was the last fall turkey season in Jersey, what looks like for a while. What are you hearing?
That could very well be the case. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, Jimmy will elaborate on that. I'll leave that. I don't want to steal his thunder. But the reality is right now is we're really begun to question, do we have the luxury of harvesting our hens? I mean, at the end of the day, we know, you know, statistically, we might take somewhere in and around 30% of our gobblers out of our flocks each year. That's a number moves a little bit, but not a whole lot.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you know, look, your egg layer, your hen, obviously, mom, she's got to bring home the broods if we're going to sustain and grow our populations.
Mm-hmm.
And in a case where you've got declining populations, you really got to ask yourself, do you have the luxury to harvest hens?
Yeah, Lou, when the season started back in the late 90s and we did have a much stronger population of birds statewide, I was all for it. Now, as much as I'm for, yeah, harvest, I love to eat wild turkey. I'll take a hen, no problem. I'm Mr. Meat, as everyone pretty much knows. But, yeah, when you knock down a hen, possibly you're eliminating survival percentages, whatever, 2, 3, possibly 4 birds in the population for next year, counting the hen, correct?
That's correct. And you know, some of the research over the years, and it's not shop talk, it's reality. We've got a measurable population of our hens that for, and we don't really know exactly why, but are not producing, are not mm-hmm. going to nest. We've got, you'll hear this term, super hen. You can call her whatever you want, but we've got, just like in a lot of the animal world, we've got great mothers and not so good. And so, you know, when we're out there looking at our population of our flocks, when we're hunting, we can't tell the difference between, you know, what hens year over year delivering good broods and which ones aren't. So, mm-hmm.
Right.
Look, when you get into these situations with your wildlife, you gotta make tough decisions if you're really, really serious about the long-term survival of these species.
Yeah, it comes around. As much as I just really, for lack of a better term, hate the losing of a season, because there's always the thing, you know, you lose this, it may never come back, you won't get it back. But in this case, Lou, it is all the signals are pointing to, yeah, some trouble. So let's start the process of elimination. If eliminating that week-long season, and it's a small harvest of hens, but it's still, you're taking hens out of the population, have to do it.
It's not a big number, but I'll remind you that back in the 70s, the flock in New Jersey was started with just over 20 hens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, numbers matter, and they can add up quick. And we don't have a lot of levers to pull, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, when you look at the complexity of legislature and how game codes have to be, how long it takes to get a change done and the work that has to go into it. And, you know, so when you really get down to it, look, we can't control the weather. We know we've got continued loss of habitat statewide. We're going to work hard to improve habitat. It's something that's a beast of a project, but we're taking it on.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, what can you do short term before you can affect things long term?
Exactly. But Lou, when you talk about habitat, how ironic that the suburbs have some of the best, strongest wild turkey populations in the state.
Yeah, we've got our predators to contend with. And, you know, at the end of the day, I tell folks, people talk to me all the time, I go, look, predators, call them whatever you want, but that's what animals do. They eat each other. Let's mm-hmm. face it. I mean, that's the wheel of life out there. But as we shrink their living areas, we've created more complexity with this. Trapping is not what it was. We hope we're seeing pretty favorable results in our trapping classes. Hopefully, we'll find a new generation of folks that'll get out there and put that to use as the conservation tool that it can be. But all these things, you know, whether it's potential disease effects, weather, potentially over-harvesting, predation.
The list
keeps getting longer, and research begins to even shed things that maybe grow that list even more. So a little bit of a complex project.
Lou says, my lovely Dee Marie says, don't put stuff out in the universe. And I used to say, what are you... So Lou, sometimes the stuff comes true. It's like, oh, she's right again. But Lou, so far, we've been able to dodge a proverbial load of number four shot, turkey loads, whatever, with the avian flu. So far, I have not heard any reports of them the disease impacting the wild turkey flocks. Have you?
No. No, and believe me, I and a lot of other folks, we keep our fingers crossed with that, because we know with these viruses, you know, they can change on a dime, right? Year over year over year, they continue to morph into other different strains, if you will. And so let's hope we keep that one out of our population, because we've got enough to deal with right now. We don't need any new enemies.
Exactly right. Joining us online is Lou Gambale, Jersey's own Board of National Board of Directors, National Wild Turkey Federation. Lou, very proud of you. Congratulations on that. Hang in for another segment. People, grab that cup, grab that Rebel. Be right back. Rack and Fin Raider. Now we're going to talk some pre-scouting, man. Hey, gobbler season, what? 5 weeks away? A month away? 5 weeks? 6 weeks? It's coming.
Yeah,
it's
going to
be here before
weeks,
you know it, baby. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5. Bullet points.
I'm Evan Brown. Is your castle still your castle if you rent it? A number of states have in some way codified their castle doctrine, the idea that it is legal to use deadly force to defend oneself and one's family from a home invader. The law surrounding that idea may vary from state to state about the specifics, though all 50 have enacted it to varying degrees. Texas law is quite wide-ranging, allowing that protection to one's home, vehicle, and place of business. However, one woman found out her rented home was a no-gun zone. A couple of years ago, Aaliyah Wallace of Fort Worth shot a home invader in her federally subsidized apartment. She faced no charges, but her landlord evicted her, saying guns were against the lease. Now, Texas legislators have a bill that would prevent eviction in the case of deadly force, but some say the bill doesn't actually protect against eviction just for gun ownership in a rented home. And those are your bullet points. I'm Evan Brown, Fox News.
Why? Why do we ignore the things that give us pause, that seem out of place, that don't feel right? The answer to why defines who we are. So if you see something, why do you say something?
I see safe for my friends.
For my community.
For my family.
For each other. Because all of this matters.
We all have something worth protecting. So why do you see safe?
Report suspicious activity to local authorities. If you see something, say something.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
We are back on the Spring Gobbler track with Lou Gambale, Jersey's own. How cool is this, man? Of course, Jersey has a bunch of celebrities. This guy is the coolest, though, when it comes to that, because we are talking Spring Gobblers. Time to get a little bit of some pre-scouting. Watch a turkey moon, locate some flocks. Again, a week goes by, another week goes by, and before you know it, oh, haven't had a chance to get out there. Where are the turkeys? They're moving. Okay, things are going to change between now and opening day, okay? But it's good to get a track on where the birds are and where they are moving. Hey, Lou, man, like I said, I'm out there 77, towards Alloway, you know, out that area there. A lot of farmland out there, and seeing birds, I was kind of surprised, but they are there.
Well, they're still in their winter flock. So if you come upon if you're fortunate to see a flock, there should be a fair amount of birds in them. For the most part, the gobblers are, males are still together and the hens are still together, starting to get a little intermingling, and the pecking order process is beginning to start. And I see some 60s in the weather forecast coming up, and you know, these warmer days, sunny days, it's going to accelerate the process.
Listen, by the way, let me interject a little on sequitur here. Big beard, long beard. Lou has a 13-inch beard on that wall. Lou, congratulations. Double-digit plus, man.
Yeah, we don't get many of them.
Where did, Jersey bird?
No, he was an out-of-state bird.
North Carolina.
North Carolina. 11 inches. Yeah, 11 inches, 10 inches. Gobblers beat up their beards. you know, really, it's not, necessarily a good indicator of his age, because this, you know, you could have a gobbler that loses most all his beard, and he could still be a four-year-old bird.
Look, okay, we'll get back. Let's get back to this here. What caught my attention? I know they keep the economic engine going around the country. Stuck behind another freaking tractor, going slow. The guy had a load, whatever. And what caught my attention, Lou, off to the left in the back, I said, "Those are turkeys." Some of you're going slow. You're just, you know, you're going slowly. And Lou, he was in strut, in fanning. Is that this early? I mean, there he was.
Sure.
He was out.
Well, you know, you can see gobblers strutting in December. You know,
December.
I think in the turkey world, unlike with the domestic turkeys, if the wild turkeys, if the hens would allow the gobblers to breed year round, they would, I believe. So you're going to get those days where they're going to display. But I can tell you, between now and as the weeks go forward here into April, you're going to absolutely see an increase in that activity.
Lou, that warmer temperature or the daylight savings time? I know they don't go by that, but this longer daylight period, that's really percolating, isn't it?
Yep. Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, they're probably beginning to establish their pecking orders. Mm-hmm. They do it, both the males do it, and the hens do it. And, you know, this plays a huge part in the whole breeding and nesting sequence. So, as we get closer, you know, we know we have birds that breed in March. You know,
in March?
It has a lot to do with it. Yeah, towards the end of the month, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, in that case, can a hen now nest twice in the spring?
Yes.
Can she raise two broods?
Yes, because when she's bred the first time, she's fertile. You know, for actually close almost up to well over into a month and a half, you know, or so she stays fertile. So you got to think, you know, she can go to a nest, have a nest destroyed or abort a nest for whatever reason, and she has the ability to go back and re-nest. Now, the downside of that is usually when they re-nest, you won't get as many. You won't get as many eggs in that mm-hmm. second brood as you would in the first, but it does happen quite a bit. That's part of research. You know, one of the good mm-hmm. things about research is for our birds that will go to nest, we're able to keep an eye on them and really get a sense of what they're doing and bake some hard number percentages into that.
Okay, Lou, let's go again. Where to look right now? Again, private land had, again, I said earlier, 1,657 birds hard. Public land, 664. Shout out to DEP's Fish and Wildlife Bureau of Lands Management. They got some great crews out there improving the habitat, especially Jimmy Hardaby up north. I don't know the name of the central person, and Nate Figley down here in the southern region. But Lou, on these public lands, like Glassboro, areas like that, where you have good habitat, where are you starting to look now? You want to get out, start to look around for turkeys. You're looking for tracks. You're looking for scat. Where would you find the birds moving now, the next couple of weeks?
Well, obviously, if you're riding around or on your looking on private land or WMAs, you know, you're looking to open areas.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to transition through the woods, but they're going to start to get into the open areas, and that's where you'll be able to get a look at them. You still can't put a whole lot of Can't put a ton of stock into what you see
right now.
They're going to break up, and those flocks, when they scatter, some of those birds are going to stay close to the area where you see them,
mm-hmm.
and some are going to go miles away.
Well, to me, Lou, it's that that's my thing. There are going to be some birds here. That's what floats my boat doing this early season scatter. Besides, I just like being out there and seeing them. Yeah.
Yeah, there are going to be some birds that'll stay in that area, and as you move further down the line, closer to the season, you're definitely going to start seeing less birds in that one area, but you can kind of get a bet that those birds you see, let's say 3-4 weeks from now, mm-hmm. that's pretty much where they're going to be in that general area.
Lou, a longtime acquaintance of mine who unfortunately passed, I should say several, more than around a decade ago, Sort of broke me in way up there in North Jersey in a Flatbrook, Delaware Water Gap area, you know, over by Wayweyanda and that eastern part of Sussex County. But he would scout when the birds were out, and he'd start to hit some calls early, like in late March, early April, or a gobble call here. He said, "Tom P, just to find where to go around." He said, "They're going to answer you." Have you ever done that?
You know, periodically I'll use a locator call.
Yeah.
I don't do a whole lot of that early in a season. I kind of just try to get eyes on them and make my notes of the areas where I might plan on hunting. I don't need them to answer me. They don't have to answer me. When I go hunting, sure, in the morning I might use a locator call, or midday, you know, whether it's an owl call or a crow call or something to that effect, but you know, or strike one up midday with a long box because I'm trying to get a shot gobble. But early in the season, for me, mostly it's visual. I will go out early in the morning here in a couple few weeks and a cup of coffee and get up in the dark and go out and just go put myself in the woods and sit up against a tree and listen to the woods wake up.
Look, but I'm saying, especially if you're hunting a new area, like you're new, you have the maps, you have Google Earth and the whole bit. To me, it's still, if you get a response, a bird might be there, might not be there in a few weeks in the season. But you know, okay, something's around. There are turkeys around. So that was the plus, as the guy explained it to me. God rest his soul. He's up there.
He's up there
on a field edge somewhere, man.
God bless him. Everybody's got their technique. I just caution folks because a lot of hunters like to hear themselves call. And it's something we can easily get drug into, you know, having a serenade with a gobbler. And, you know, and during the hunting season, look, it is what it is. If you get lured into it, don't be surprised if he doesn't hang up on you. But early in the season, sometimes I've come up on guys wearing a turkey out, and the season's still 2 weeks from opening up.
There you
and
go.
I'm like, oh, my goodness.
That's the downside.
Give yourself a break. Give him a break.
So this time of year, again, going into the early season scouting, first light, midday, late afternoon, the birds are just going to be where they're going to be. And they're moving around again, still in the winter flocks. Yeah. But you said, by the day now, that bond's starting to loosen. You know, so what do you think? Just get out there when you can?
Yeah, get out there when you can. I mean, as the days get nicer and the days get longer, sometimes I like to, you know, if in the late afternoon and evening, you know, go pull up at a place, you've got a pair of binoculars, sit and watch the birds, you see where they go in the woods. Well, he's a good bet that somewhere in proximity there, that's where they're going to roost. And so you get eyes on them then. And if you do that, well, you know, if you want, you can come back the next morning. And, you know, what I always caution folks is when you're scouting the birds, don't pressure the birds. You know, don't drive right up on them. Don't walk right up on them. You don't have to.
Excuse me. He said that for my benefit, people. Then he says, "What are you doing?" I just get too cranked up. What are you doing?
Well, it's almost like folks in our national parks when they feel the need to get out of their car and walk up close to take a picture of a bear or a bison or a moose. And I think, yeah, and then when he turns around and knocks you over, well, in the turkey world, obviously he's not going to come after you.
Hey, Gambale, I saw something happen in a 7-Eleven parking lot once with a pair of Jake, actually three Jakes jumped on this guy, man. So I went looking at him. Man, they're pissed off.
There's no question. Sometimes they get froggy. You know, I tell people, if you're near a wild turkey and he starts side-eyeing you, you ought to start walking the other way because he might be sizing you up for a hit.
They'll take it. Well, listen, we only have a few minutes left in this segment. We're on the line with Lou Gambale. We recently elected at the convention. It was the last month down here in Nashville, the National Board of Directors, National Wild Turkey Federation. Again, Lou, congratulations on that. But let's talk about the federation in the last few minutes we have, Lou. Go into the organization. We have Jersey chapters. What's it all about?
It's all about, really, it's about, you know, building our flock through membership. I'm happy to say I talked to our state chapter president, Scott Hill, this week, and I think we're now up over 1,800 members. We're really going to work hard here to get to that 2,000 member mark. And honestly, we've got almost 10,000 permitted turkey hunters in New Jersey. I mean, look, utopia for us would be at least half of those folks would join up and join our flock and help us really raise necessary funds. The money we raised, 90 cents on a dollar. You can go online and verify this. Goes to our mission.
90 cents on the, that's unheard of, Gambale.
90 cents on a dollar. And then you can look at Charity Navigator. You can look at our website. This is real. We're proud of this. And the, look, we don't apologize for raising money. We need funds to support the work that we're doing, either with Fish and Wildlife at the state level, some work at the federal level. We're beginning to look at work with private landowners. We've got great programs.
Beautiful.
We partner with NRCS. The future's bright for our organization. We've never been in a better place. I'm so proud of the folks that and on the organization side that work so hard to put us in the place we're in. And, you know, we're able to be a force to be reckoned with now for conservation. And conservation affects everybody, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't have to be a hunter or a fisherman. You know, all our men and women and children. Listen, we're the stewards of our wildlife at the end of the day. So, you know, when folks come to our events, we get an incredibly diverse crowd at our events statewide, nationwide. And they're the folks that step up and spend their hard-earned money.
Absolutely.
For the greater good.
And Lou, at 90 cents on a dollar, people, you can see the results. Other great organizations get, I don't know, that close to that, but that's, and you're seeing the work done, and you've recognized the problem, and it's a galvanization, rather, of forces, and good luck with this.
Hey, our mission is, we're clear what our mission is, and we've got great plans in place, projects in place regionally. And we're getting up every day and getting after it.
Hey, listen, go to National Wild Turkey Federation, Google it, get involved. Great organization. Lou, thanks for some early season scouting tips. I'm going to be out there, I think it's Tuesday or Wednesday next week, going to be warming up a little bit. And I will be out again, not that part, not down 77, some other areas. I just got Lou, it's the spring fever. Love my trout fishing, love the April tog, and I like that. Just something about turkeys, Lou. Just something about turkeys, man.
All I tell people right now, look and listen.
There you go. Lou, you take. Oh, by the way, how are the boys doing, man?
Boys are fantastic.
Didn't your son Luke just, didn't he just like MMA beat somebody up or something or won something? What's the deal with that?
Well, my middle son, Luke, fought last year in Liberty Bell Brawl 2 up in Philly, raised almost $20,000 for cancer. My youngest son's fighting April 10th, Ethan. He's going to fight in the same program, Liberty Bell 3. He's already raised, he's getting close to $7,000 for cancer. 100% of the monies they raise goes for cancer research nationwide. And you know, I'm real proud of their philanthropic efforts. And then, you know, my oldest boy, you know, he's got his thing going up there with his new business endeavor. And we're excited about the season getting ready to start.
And the Gambale Posse, man. Rough and tumble. Okay, well, you take care, man. Let's get together with doing some calling. Give me some more tips. I'm going to need them.
March 15th at Batstow, we got our seminar coming up.
Yeah, we'll catch you later, man. Be good. Best to everybody.
All right, brother.
See ya.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5, South Jersey's talk station.
Fox News. I'm Deborah Valentine. Police say three gunmen, one using an assault rifle, remain at large following a shooting at a pub in East Toronto. 12 adults shot with injuries ranging from minor to critical. The motives unknown. One police officer dead, a second in critical condition following a shooting in Newark, New Jersey Friday night. Sebastian Hernandez told Fox 5 New York.
I heard it, and it was really close, and we don't really get that much action around this area or anything. Like, last time I heard gunshots was like summer of 2020.
A suspect was reportedly shot at the scene. Two people within the Department of Homeland Security identified as alleged leakers of information about ICE raids. Christy Noem is Secretary of Homeland Security.
We plan to prosecute these two individuals and hold them accountable for what they've done. And we're going to continue to do all that we can to keep America safe.
She says the leaks jeopardized agents and compromised operations. America's listening to Fox News.
Your WPG Talk Radio 95.5 AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey. For today, it's looking sunny outside. We could see a little bit of windy conditions in the area with a high of 51. For tomorrow, we could see some windy conditions again with a mix of clouds and sun. Other than that, it's looking pretty good with a warm-up on the way, high 53. On Monday, sunny and beautiful with a high of 65. I'm AccuWeather's Caitlin Lawrence on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Next week, March 15th. Pretty sure it's sold out, but hey, if you show up, I think they're going to kick you out. It's a turkey hunting seminar with Luke Gambale himself, the main man, and Fish and Wildlife's Joe Leske, another cool, great turkey hunter. It's going to be there at the Batstow Visitor Center. Check it out. Go to njfishandwildlife.com. Hey, man, see if I know registration may be over, but just see. You show up, I don't think they're going to kick you out. I think you have room in there for 105. Well, hey, what a great time I had working the AC Boat Show. Shout out to some people out there again that said, hey, Tom P, but I'll tell you, I was blown. Well, not surprisingly so, but sort of like wowzer so. We're in a fisherman booth, both sides, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Saturday in particular, no less that I counted. No, and that's in between. Hey, Tom P, I know you're on the radio. No less than, I think it was loose figures, 18, 19, 20, 25, maybe even 30 during the course of the day. And meanwhile, the guy was running back and forth to the seminar area. Jim Hutchinson Jr., managing editor of Fisherman Magazine. His videos, man, had people rocking. Everybody loved his videos. So I said, I put a call on some of my peeps down there in Cape May where Steven Spielberg, his crew's there, they're trying to get Hutch a gig here, man. I think he can do it. Anyway, the March edition of the Fisherman Magazine is out. As always, the very first thing I go to is the editor's log. Hutch knocked it out of the city. No matter, forget the ballpark. I got to say, Separation Anxiety, one of his greatest, most insightful editorial logs ever. Almost like a divide and conquer type thing here, hitting this against that, again this type of fishery against that type. It's absolutely crazy. It'd blow your mind. He's made some time for his album. Again, winter flounders open. Hey. You got, Striper Open Hay, Tatagas, he's also known as Stripe Hutch, the Bass Hammer Hutchinson. He's going to talk about this outstanding editorials log. And again, Hutch, congratulations. Dude, you are a star, my man.
No, we've got a great magazine. You've been part of it longer than I have. It's just a great place to be. And we have such a, there's such a hardcore audience in New Jersey. Our community is so strong, and the Fisherman Magazine has always been there for that community since the early 1970s. So, I just came in. It's a turnkey solution. If I were to leave tomorrow, the next man up is there. I appreciate that, but
I don't know, man. Your videos, Hutch, your videos, come on. Everybody loved him, man. Hey, the most heartfelt thing to me is to watch this young fellow. I think he's maybe 8 or 9. I think his name is George. Comes up, eyes all bugging out. Mm-hmm. I watch you, and Hutch, you were just so gracious with him and his family. I mean, that to me is protecting the future of fishing in New Jersey or enhancing it, guaranteeing it, because that kid was walking on air, man. And so were a bunch of other people.
Well, that's where I've been shaking off an illness all this week. And historically, 80% of the time I leave Atlantic City because it's so busy and it's 5 days, I'm coming back with some type of bug. So this bug, here it is Saturday morning and I've got some things to do today, but I'm sitting at my desk hoping to feel better 100% by next week. But again, I really think what you noticed is that the coalition, that strength that we have in the recreational community. It's freshwater, it's salt, it's south, it's North Jersey, it's offshore, it's inshore, it's surf versus the guy that gets on a for-hire boat. That is the community strength that we've always had, which is why getting back to that editorial in the March edition, I'm very concerned about these ideas to, they're split. Calling it sector separation, right? It's splitting the recreational community into pieces. And at the time that I wrote this for the March edition and leading up to the meeting, the very first meeting 2 weeks ago for New Jersey about this plan, I've talked to a number of different council members, talked to different captains and council members from other states who, they're coming to me and kind of asking me my questions because they know that I guess I'm loud and abrasive and tell you what I think. But, really a dangerous time when you look at the recreational community as a whole and say, you know, you've got in that recreational community, that's anglers, that's catch and release guys, that's guys who want to catch something for dinner. This guy who's got his own boat, doesn't have a boat, goes on a for hire cap, he goes on a for hire trip, could be on a head boat, he could be on a charter boat. We're all the same. But what's happened is because of the lack of quality data collection coming out of NOAA Fisheries, they're recognizing now after 15 years since they were supposed to fix the Marine Recreational Information Program, make it more robust, they're realizing that they've got two different sets of really wildly fluctuating data. There's the MRIP, the random surveys of private anglers, and then there's the boats, the for-hire boats that get a federal permit. See, if you're a charter captain, doesn't matter if you're a six-pack or a headboat. If you're taking customers out beyond 3 miles for gorgies, summer flounder, sea bass, or bluefish, mm-hmm. you have to get a federal permit to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So once you get that federal permit, then you have to keep a daily trip log. A daily trip log every time you fish with all your customers. You have to submit that electronically. It's called an EVTR, an electronic vessel trip report. So ostensibly, if NOAA Fisheries, ASMSC, the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council, they're all coming back saying, look, we're seeing a disproportionate value here. We see that the folks on for hire boats are catching fewer fish than on private anglers. Then the argument is the sector separation, saying, well, the private anglers should have a different set of regulations than the for hire angler, right? That's what this is all about.
Isn't there there's something like this going on with the bluefish, right?
So that's the problem, and you nailed it. So the ASMFC, which is the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, and the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council are getting together saying, we've got to come up with a plan to allow different sets of regulations for private angler versus the angler on for hire boats, and we got to do that for all these new species. But if you stop for a second and say, wait a minute, you're already doing that with bluefish.
Yeah.
You've got a mode split for bluefish. It's not a separate quota. You're just saying, hey, if you're on a for hire boat, you get 5 bluefish. If you're a private, you get 3. But they also do it with blue line tilefish. So,
ooh.
Tom, that nails it right there, because it's like, why do this when you can already do it? You can already do a mode split. And this is the key thing that I've been telling people. And that's what I reference in my editorial. The folks that are calling me, some of them want to separate the recreational fishing quota into two pieces, right? That is true sector separation.
Mm-hmm.
They want to say, now we've got 3 pieces of pie, the commercial piece, the for hire piece, and the private piece. If you do that, the recreational fishing industry, as we know it, is over. Because now you're going to get a separate piece of the pie, and you can do whatever you want with it. And some of these guys up in New England, I've talked to them, and they tell me they don't feel this way anymore. But as I talk to more and more people, it's still a common theme. There's some folks that want to use this as like a golden parachute, right? So if you separate the quota of the recreational quota into two pieces, you assign quota to some for-hire captains in a particular region, that belongs to me, right? I'm a for-hire captain. I take that quota. So once I have that ownership of that quota, I can do whatever I want with it. I could lease it out. I could sell it, could transfer it over here. That's the danger here that we're in. But as a recreational community, I think we have to go into this with our eyes wide open. It came up the other night. I was at the New Jersey Marine Fisheries Council meeting in Manahawkin on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be a lot. There's going to be a lot of conversation about this over the next year. And people should pay attention to it. Try to attend a meeting and think about this, because like I say in my editorial, I don't know if I've got much fight left anymore, because if the data is so wrong, if the government's not going to fix the data, I don't know what else to do.
What else can you do, Hutch? I mean,
right,
you could rail about it for so long, but and try to open as many eyes as you can, but
it's sad. But the other thing is, the only person that should be able to apply for this special mode split, you know, take a different limit, is if you have the EVTR. If you have the permit and you're doing the EVTR, you know what that means? Your daily accounting of everything that's caught on your boat. And that's another thing that also came out of that first meeting, is that there's a time where we're going to be talking in the recreational fishing community about us as private anglers keeping daily trip recording for every time that we go out. Mandatory trip reporting, where every time we go out, we have to compile a list of all the people that fished with us and how many drips we made and how many fish we caught, and submit that. So this is where we are at this point.
Hutch, we were talking about the air listeners, and it was just reminiscing a little bit how, again, especially the party boat fleets, whatever. Hutch, there used to be so many more boats, so many more anglers, and everything seemed to be just going fine. I mean, you must have a list from what year was that issue of the magazine you had? 89?
I'm sitting at my desk right now. It's from 1989. You know, when I go down, I mean, dig this. This is the 1989 July 6th, July 12th edition. Out of Atlantic City, I had the Captain Applegate. It's a 90-foot Applejack. You know, some people might remember that. Yeah. If I go down into Wildwood, you had the Rainbow, the Adventurer, Captain Robbins, Kathy Two, Starfish, Royal Flush, Starlight Fleet, Jersey Cape Charters. Cape May was robust. The Sea Star Fleet, Doubleheader, Huntress, Billy Bones, Porgy 3, Tide Runner, Nomad 2.
And that's where I learned to fish Cape May with the late, great Lou Rodia on the Porgy 4, Captain Paul Thompson.
Right. A classic. But we had so many. You know, and that's where I grew up on LBI. I remember going down to Barnegat Light, seeing all those boats in Barnegat Light.
And then and you had a lineup. I remember having to get to the lot at least an hour early if you wanted a shot at a good spot along the rail.
Correct. You know, that's why I alluded to that in the editorial, and I think that must have triggered something with you. Because you could go down to Belmar or Barnegat or Cape May, Point Pleasant, and as you walked along the docks, there were barkers there. You still see it. I still see it when I go up to Atlantic Highlands. There's barkers there saying, come on aboard, come on.
There's a couple left,
So, I mean, these were classic days with lots of folks fishing, and you know, that's what we're looking at, and that's the biggest concern here. And that came up on Thursday in Manahawkin, because we're losing our for hire fleet slowly but surely losing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a gateway drug. Those headboats used to take a lot of people who came from all over the Northeast.
They were absolutely
here for the summer. You know, it was an introduction to fishing for so many people, and we're losing that gateway. And that's what's difficult. So the sector separation, I've been telling people, if you call it a mode split, it's a different discussion that we're having. If you start saying separation, this is bad. And if they split the quota, I'm telling you, if they split our quota into pieces, we're dead. It's over.
Okay, listeners, join us on the line is Jim Hutchison, Jr., managing editor of New Jersey Delaware Bay edition of Fisherman Magazine, the finest fisheries newsman out there, bar none. Hutch, we're up against a break here. However, just like you said with the light, the topic is the March 29th editor's log, Fisherman Magazine. Check it out. It's on page 3 of the local section. Hutch's last line, it is great. However, if this plan ends up splitting our recreational harvest limits into two separate pieces of quota, listen to me, people, then just do me a favor. The last one out, please shut off the lights. Hutch, you couldn't have said it any more smash in the face than that, man.
Well, I appreciate that. But you also caught me at a moment where I'm getting caught up on some ideas this morning, and I'm writing one about Governor Murphy for the April edition. So we'll see if you like that one coming out next month.
Hey, Hutch, does that come with a voodoo doll? A paper cutout? Well, Jim, again, congratulations. Fishermen crush it there at the AC Boat Show and all the other shows, I understand. They have a lot of stuff coming up, the Saltwater Expo and everything. I mean, how you guys keep it rolling. And also, shout out to Jenny Ackerman there. She was ace. She packed that seminar seminar section like it was nobody's business.
You know, I'm thrilled and honored to work with the National Marine Manufacturers Association to put all those seminars together. We had a all-star cast, you know, come in. But I think the Jenny seminar was the biggest, most attended seminar all week. She's fantastic. We had a great crew. You did a fantastic job. I love spending time in the booth with you, Tom.
I can't shut up. That must be Toppy. Shut up.
It's a great show. I look forward to it every year, and it was great seeing so many old friends at Atlantic City again last week. And one more week, Saltwater Fishing Expo next week, and then I can start working on my boat.
That always seems like every year you're saying that, Jimmy. And then something else happens. Join us online again, Jim Hutchison Jr. Check out the March edition of the Fisherman Magazine, page 3, Separation Anxiety. Really open up some eyes. It's almost like a divide and conquer thing, Hutch. I don't know. Doesn't that sound sort of like maybe overly dramatic, yeah. But it's happening.
Look, we part of that rally back in 2010, we brought commercial and recreational fishermen together on Capitol Hill.
I remember right? that.
And I've been told, you know, even though I grew up in, you know, where I grew up on LBI, my friends from Barnegat Light, they're my oldest, dearest friends. Some of them are commercial fishermen. You know, oh, you're not supposed to be friends with him. Get out of here. You know, you don't know what you're talking about. We're always, the recreational community and the commercial community, always going to differ on allocation and gear. And as soon as you align yourselves with the fact that you're never going to agree on allocation and gear, then the rest is gravy. So if we were to have found more causes to unite on with the commercial and recreational community, we would have been so powerful. But that division was always going to be memorialized, and now we're seeing that crack in the recreational community. It's a short fall from that.
And Jim, you've seen but for years been seeing in the hunting community, this one versus sure. that one versus you're sure. using that. You use that. Wow, we want more of this. It's as a former neighbor. Anti-hunter, anti-fisherman, whatever, but otherwise, arch conservative, surprisingly, said, we don't have to, meaning the movement, we don't have to do anything. We watch you guys eat yourselves alive. And she was, right. you know, not being, again, overly dramatic, but she was right. So hopefully not all the time. Okay, Jim, you take care. Have a great season. Hey, good luck next week at the Saltwater Expo.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to working on the boat. You have a great day, too. Thank
Before
you.
Before you go, real fast, how's the dad? He's catching fish where?
Last I talked to him, he was in Marathon, Florida. He fishes the Marathon Lady quite a bit. So I don't know if he started moving up to the west coast of Florida yet to catch some grapefruit league games, but as soon as the stripers start to get hot and heavy, he'll be back home.
All I know is those Orioles are going to suck again. Okay, Hutch, you take care, man. See ya.
See ya. Go.
Yeah, page 3, local section. Separation Anxiety. Hutch opens the eyes, man. He opens the eyes. Be right back. Close it out. Rack and Fin Radio.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. South Jersey's talk station.
Hi, this is Gordon Deal. Coming up on This Weekend, today's home buyers say they're finding sellers willing to negotiate. We'll look at the power shift. Also, clocks spring forward this weekend in most of the country, but that can have an impact on our mental health. Hear from an expert. Plus, why a penguin in Texas has folks questioning their career choices, and Major League Baseball experiments with robot umpires behind the plate. That and more coming up on This Weekend.
This morning at 6 on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Hey, I'm your mountain bike. Been a minute since we hit the trail. Why not roll me over to Goodwill? Donating me helps Goodwill's mission to provide career training and support services right here in the community. And that keeps us all moving. Donate today. On your left. To find your nearest Goodwill locations and to learn more about our mission, please visit goodwill.org. Goodwill, where your things start new lives.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
That'll wrap it up this weekend, March 8th and 9th on Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Get out and enjoy the striper bite. It's hot. White perch bite is hot, and pickerel and largeouts, man. And we're starting to see some crappie and yellow perch action. And don't forget, oh, it's going to be a little north here. If you can find them, they're out there chumming at you, the winter flounder. I know it's only two fish, but boy, are they good eating. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. See you next weekend. The Ides. Next weekend, the Ides of March. Rack and Fin Radio.